a bird.
It's a plane.
It's Superman.
When you think of a hero, who comes to mind? I hope it's not a fictional character like Superman. Perhaps someone a little closer to home, a mom, a dad, maybe even a son or a daughter. Perhaps someone from the New Testament or the Old Testament. Well, today on Focus on the Family, we're going to hear from someone who many classify as a hero, and we're also going to look back in tribute to the many heroes of World War II. Thanks for joining us. Our host, as always, is psychologist and author Dr. James Dobson, and I'm Mike Trout. We're going to share in the next 30 minutes a conversation that Dr. Dobson and I had on June the 4th, just 2 days before the 55th anniversary of a very significant day in history, June the 6th, 1944. And, of course, that was D-Day. Here's Dr. Dobson.
This being June the 4th, Mike, we're just 2 days away from the 55th anniversary of a very significant day in American history, June the 6th, 1944.
And that, of course, is the date of the D-Day landings on the coast of France that began the liberation of what the Nazis called Fortress Europe. They thought it was impregnable.
I think, Mike, it is very fitting for us to pause today and remember the sacrifices that were made at Normandy and to pay tribute to the young men who risked their lives on that day. Indeed, more than 2,000 of them died trying to gain a foothold there on that one beach, on Omaha Beach, and there were four other landings that day.
You're a history buff, and I know you've just read a couple of books on that subject, haven't you?
As a matter of fact, I have, and both of them written by one of my favorite authors, historian Stephen Ambrose. The first is called D-Day, and describes the things that we're talking about here.
Right.
And the second is Citizen Soldiers. I'll mention that in a minute. Together, these two books tell the story of the last year of World War II and the titanic struggle to free the captive peoples of Europe.
For those who are too young to remember, and there would be many people like that in our audience, explain exactly what happened on D-Day.
Mike, it really is a shame that the history of that terrible struggle is not being taught in many of the schools. I'm not positive of that, but when you talk to young people, even good students, and you ask them what happened at D-Day, most of them don't know. Kids can tell you about America's shortcomings and their failures, but the heroic events are often underrepresented. On D-Day, the Allies, of course, the Americans, the French, the British, the Canadians, the Australians, and others, began landing troops on the coast of France to drive the Germans out of Europe and crush the evil Nazi regime. German army had plenty of time to set up their defenses there on the coast, and they were ready to drive the invaders back into the sea. And a terrible battle occurred on that morning. It began on the morning of June the 6th, and the outcome hung in the balance for hours. Some of our listeners may want to read Ambrose's book, D-Day. I just found it fascinating. Just every page kept you in suspense, because this thing could have gone either way for a period of time, and so much was at stake. The Allies gradually made their way up those cliffs and on into France, but the sacrifice that they made was great.
I've heard you tell of visiting Omaha Beach with Shirley and your daughter, Danae. That was a very emotional time for you. Why don't you take us there? Mm-hmm. Most of us haven't been on Omaha Beach.
Mike, you really ought to do that sometime. If you're interested in American history at all, this is a trip that you really ought to make. We stood on those cliffs right there where the machine guns had been placed, raining fire and death down on the Americans and the others who were wading ashore. It was deeply moving for me just to imagine what had happened there so many years ago. Then we walked through the American cemetery, which is placed there on the bluff overlooking Omaha Beach. And we kind of strolled along looking at the crosses and the Stars of David that marked each grave. And I quietly calculated in my own mind the ages of the men who were buried there. And many of them were 17 or 18 or 19 years of age when they fell. Then there's a little chapel right in the center of the cemetery. And I went in there alone. I asked Danae and Shirley to let me just go in by myself because I was pretty emotional by that point. And I knelt and I thanked God for the sacrifices and the courage of the young men who had fought that battle and died. And most of them were just out of high school, and yet they gave their lives there on D-Day. I will just never forget being there. And of course, Mike, those who did survive that battle weren't finished with the war. It wasn't as though they were then packed up on ships and taken home. They had to fight for almost another year in order to push the Germans back to Berlin inch by inch and to crush that regime, as I said.
A number of speeches have been made about that particular moment in history, and we have two soundtracks from a couple of speeches that we want to share today in observance of D-Day. They were made by former President Reagan, and we're going to weave together a couple of different ingredients, aren't we?
We are. Before we do that, though, there was a prayer that was prayed by President Franklin Delano Roosevelt to the American people on the morning of June 6, 1944. The news had just broken that this battle was underway, and the American people were deeply concerned. Almost every family had someone in the military at that time, a son or a brother or a husband or a father, and they knew that this was the long-awaited battle to liberate Europe. And indeed, if it failed, we would be living even today in a very different world than we are now. So the president, President Roosevelt, prayed a prayer that was carried all across the country, and we have a recording of that prayer. You can hear the somber tones voice. We've aired this before, Mike, and we will probably do it again, but we need to pause here nearly 55 years later and remember what happened there. Let's hear President Roosevelt's prayer.
Almighty God, our sons, pride of our nation, this day have set upon a mighty endeavor, a struggle to preserve our republic, our religion, and our civilization, and to set free a suffering humanity. Lead us to the saving of our country, and with our sister nations into a world unity that will spell a sure peace, a peace invulnerable to the schemings of unworthy men, and a peace that will let all men live in freedom, reaping the just rewards of their honest toil. Thy will be done, Almighty God.
Almighty God answered that prayer, Mike, and again, this would be a different place if those men had failed on that day.
And it's also difficult to imagine a president today going on national radio or national television and entreating God in the same way. Mm. Well, we said we had several ingredients today. We have a couple of speeches that you have listened to and we've pulled excerpts from that were given during a memorial service to commemorate what was done on D-Day. The speeches were shared 40 years after that date.
The Allies did gather, Mike, on those bluffs overlooking Omaha Beach on June the 6th, 1984. And their purpose was to remember the sacrifices that had been made. And Ronald Reagan was the president at that time, and he gave two speeches on that day, one on Puente Hoc, which was a bluff that the Germans were defending, and the American Rangers had to go up a rope ladder in order to take that strategic point. And they were looking straight into machine guns and rifle fire, and the courage that they showed on that day is just breathtaking. That's one of the things when I was there that moved me so deeply. And so they held that service right there on that point, and the president gave the first speech there. The second was down on Omaha Beach itself, where the bloodiest fighting occurred. And we want to let our listeners hear an edited version of both those speeches and just hear the highlights of the things that he said on that day.
This is the voice of then President Ronald Reagan. And note especially the emotion in the president's voice as the second speech ends.
We're here to mark that day in history when the Allied armies joined in battle to reclaim this continent to liberty. For four long years, much of Europe had been under a terrible shadow. Free nations had fallen. Jews cried out in the camps. Millions cried out for liberation. Europe was enslaved and the world prayed for its rescue. Here in Normandy, the rescue began. Here the Allies stood and fought against tyranny in a giant undertaking unparalleled in human history. We stand on a lonely, windswept point on the northern shore of France. The air is soft, but 40 years ago at this moment, the air was dense with smoke and the cries of men, and the air was filled with the crack of rifle fire and the roar of cannon. At dawn, on the morning of the 6th of June, 1944, 225 Rangers jumped off the British landing craft and ran to the bottom of these cliffs. Their mission was one of the most difficult and daring of the invasion: to climb these sheer and desolate cliffs and take out the enemy guns. The Rangers looked up and saw the enemy soldiers, the edge of the cliffs, shooting down at them with machine guns and throwing grenades. And the American Rangers began to climb. They shot rope ladders over the face of these cliffs and began to pull themselves up. When one Ranger fell, another would take his place. When one rope was cut, a Ranger would grab another and begin his climb again. They climbed, shot back, and held their footing. Soon, one by one, the Rangers pulled themselves over the top, and in seizing the firm land at the top of these cliffs, they began to seize back the continent of Europe. 225 came here. After 2 days of fighting, only 90 could still bear arms. Behind me is a memorial that symbolizes the Ranger daggers that were thrust into the top of these cliffs. And before me are the men who put them there. These are the boys of Puente Hope. These are the men who took the cliffs. These are the champions who helped free a continent. And these are the heroes who helped end a war. Gentlemen, I look at you and I think of the words of Stephen Spender's poem. You were men who in your, quote, lives fought for life and left the vivid air signed with your honor. 40 summers have passed since the battle that you fought here. You were young the day you took these cliffs. Some of you were hardly more than boys with the deepest joys of life before you. Yet you risked everything here. Why? Why did you do it? What impelled you to put aside the instinct for self-preservation and risk your lives to take these cliffs? What inspired all the men of the armies that met here? We look at you and somehow we know the answer. It was faith and belief. It was loyalty and love. The men of Normandy had faith that what they were doing was right, faith that they fought for all humanity, faith that a just God would grant them mercy on this beachhead or on the next. It was the deep knowledge, and pray God we have not lost it, that there is a profound moral difference between the use of force for liberation and the use of force for conquest. You were here to liberate, not to conquer, and so you and those others did not doubt your cause, and you were right not to doubt. You all knew that some things are worth dying for. One's country is worth dying for, and democracy is worth dying for, because it's the most deeply honorable form of government ever devised by man. All of you loved liberty. All of you were willing to fight tyranny, and you knew the people of your countries were behind you. The Americans who fought here that morning knew word of the invasion was spreading through the darkness back home. They felt in their hearts, though they couldn't know in fact, that in Georgia, they were filling the churches at 4 a.m. In Kansas, they were kneeling on their porches and praying. And in Philadelphia, they were ringing the Liberty Bell. Something else helped the men of D-Day. Their rock-hard belief that Providence would have a great hand in the events that would unfold here, that God was an ally in this great cause. And so, the night before the invasion, when Colonel Wolverton asked his parachute troops to kneel with him in prayer, he told them, "Do not bow your heads, but look up so you can see God and ask his blessing in what we are about to do." Strengthened by their courage, heartened by their value, and borne by their memory, let us continue to stand for the ideals for which they lived and died. Thank you very much, and God bless you all.
And now we'll transition to the second message or speech delivered at Omaha Beach.
Mr. President, distinguished guests, we stand today at a place of battle, one that 40 years ago saw and felt the worst of war. Men bled and died here for a few feet of, or inches, of sand as bullets and shell fire cut through their ranks. President Lincoln once reminded us that through their deeds, the dead of battle have spoken more eloquently for themselves than any of the living ever could, that we can only honor them by rededicating ourselves to the cause for which they gave a last full measure of devotion. Today, we do rededicate ourselves to that cause, and at this place of honor, we're humbled by the realization of how much so many gave to the cause of freedom and to their fellow man. Some who survived the battle of June 6, 1944 are here today. Others who hoped to return never did. "Someday, Liz, I'll go back," said Private First Class Peter Robert Zanatta of the 37th Engineer Combat Battalion and first assault wave to hit Omaha Beach. "I'll go back and I'll see it all again. I'll see the beach, the barricades, and the graves." Those words of Private Zanatta come to us from his daughter, Lisa Zanatta Henn, in a heart-rending story about the event her father spoke of so often. In his words, the Normandy invasion would change his life forever, she said. She tells some of his stories of World War II, but says of her father, "The story to end all stories was D-Day. He made me feel the fear of being on that boat waiting to land. I could smell the ocean and feel the seasickness. I can see the looks on his fellow soldiers' faces, the fear, the anguish, the uncertainty of what lay ahead. And when they landed, I can feel the strength and courage of the men who took those first steps through the tide to what must have surely looked like instant death." Private Zanatta's daughter wrote to me, "I don't know how or why I can feel this emptiness, this fear, or this determination, but I do. Maybe it's the bond I had with my father. All I know is that it brings tears to my eyes to think about my father as a 20-year-old boy having to face that beach." The anniversary of D-Day was always special for her family. And like all the families of those who went to war, she describes how she came to realize her own father's survival was a miracle. "So many men died. I know that my father watched many of his friends be killed. I know that he must have died inside a little each time. But his explanation to me was, you did what you had to do, and you kept on going." When men like Private Zanatta and all our Allied forces stormed the beaches of Normandy 40 years ago, they came not as conquerors, but as liberators. When these troops swept across the French countryside and into the forests of Belgium and Luxembourg, they came not to take, but to return what had been wrongly seized. When our forces marched into Germany, They came not to prey on a brave and defeated people, but to nurture the seeds of democracy among those who yearn to be free again. And we salute them today. But, Mr. President, we also salute those who, like yourself, were already engaging the enemy inside your beloved country, the French Resistance. Your valiant struggle for France did so much to cripple the enemy and spur the advance of the armies of liberation. The French forces of the interior will forever personify courage and national spirit. They will be a timeless inspiration to all who were free and to all who would be free. Today, in their memory, and for all who fought here, we celebrate the triumph of democracy. Lise Zanata Hen began her story by quoting her father, who promised that he would return to Normandy. She ended with a promise to her father, who died 8 years ago of cancer. "I'm going there, Dad. And I'll see the beaches and the barricades and the monuments. I'll see the graves, and I'll put flowers there just like you wanted to do. I'll feel all the things you made me feel through your stories and your eyes. I'll never forget what you went through, Dad, nor will I let anyone else forget. Dad, I'll always be proud." Through the words of his loving daughter, who is here with us today, a D-Day veteran has shown us the meaning of this day far better than any president can. It is enough for us to say about Private Zanata and all the men of honor and courage who fought beside him 4 decades ago, we will always remember. We will always be proud. We will always be prepared, so we may be always free.
Well, again, we are remembering D-Day on this edition of Focus on the Family, just 2 days away from the anniversary of the landing on the coast of France, and former President Ronald Reagan, with those excerpts from two different speeches, has been helping us in this time of remembrance. Doctor?
As you said when you described these speeches at the top of the program, Mike, the president had a lot of emotion in his voice. I've seen a video of him actually speaking on the occasion of those two speeches, mm-hmm. and he was crying. He was having a very hard time there at the end of that second speech, trying to maintain his composure.
You almost get the impression that he had to end early because of the emotion. It's too bad that that soldier could not have gone back and been there on that day.
It is, Mike, but we can remember. And we can be thankful and grateful, and we can honor those men for what they did there on that occasion. I mentioned in a program that we did several weeks ago that I'm told that approximately 1,500 of those veterans from that war are dying every day. They will soon be gone. The final representative of those veterans that fought that war will soon be gone. And it will remain alive only if we take the time to recall it and to pass it on to future generations. We owe it to those young men to do that, because our freedom was at stake at that time. And not only for those who fought at D-Day, but those who fought in the Pacific War and those who have fought in many other wars since then, including Korea and Vietnam and the Gulf War and others. I have great respect for our military, for the men and women who make the sacrifices to serve and protect, even if it puts their lives at risk. And I think it was appropriate that we took the time today to devote this program to those recollections.
Well, you've been listening to Focus on the Family and a broadcast conversation that Dr. Dobson and I had back in June, just 2 days before the anniversary, the 55th anniversary of D-Day. If you'd like to get in touch with us, if there's any way we can help you and your family here at Focus on the Family, we have a website. It's simply family.org. Our producer has been Deanna Williams. Engineering and production were taken care of by Steve Ryder and Jim Adam. Our managing producer is Jan Nations. And I'm Mike Trout, inviting you back when we'll again turn our hearts toward home.